That many cases have been reported in a five-month period in 2014 to 2015, but the CDC isn't even curious why that might be. Perhaps that's because finding the answer could hurt the president politically. They're doing the same fake science with tuberculosis. The Lynn, Massachusetts scare was by no means an isolated incident, but it is interesting that there have been no statements by the CDC about the origin of the disease there. Remember how fast they were to announce the source of the Disneyland outbreak of measles in February 2015? Within days, the CDC had done genetic tests indicating the virus was similar to strains seen in Indonesia, Qatar, Azerbaijan, and Dubai. We don't know exactly how this outbreak started, but we do think it was likely a person infected with measles overseas, the CDC's Dr. Anne Schuchat told reporters. Why were they so quick to determine the origin of the measles strain, but not the origin of the much more dangerous tuberculosis outbreak? I can think of one possible answer. The measles was likely carried into the United States by a tourist here legally, and thus not politically damaging to the president. But the tuberculosis in Lynn was probably brought in by an infected illegal immigrant child carrying the disease into its overloaded community health center. Announcing that would have been very harmful to the president politically. We're supposed to believe that's a coincidence. Do you? Tuberculosis cases in the United States have been steadily declining for 60 years, from over 50 cases per 100,000 in 1953 to just 3 per 100,000 in 2013. Numbers for 2014 were not available at the time of this writing, but I assume that trend will continue, in spite of cases the administration may have brought in with its immigration policies. What if it doesn't? If there is an uptick in the number of cases for the first time in 60 years, will the CDC investigate then? So far, the CDC's answer to sudden outbreaks of disease has been the same as Obama's answer to everything else. Blame Americans. They blame the small percentage of parents who don't vaccinate their children. Never mind that this has been the case for decades, and the outbreaks started only after Obama started inviting sick children into the country and then shipping them all over the states. Who cares about scientific concepts like controlling for other causes? Not the Lysenkoites at the CDC. I've only given you a few examples of the dozens of deadly diseases that could potentially enter the United States as a result of the president's irresponsible, politically motivated immigration policy. Faith in federal agencies to control the spread of these diseases is obviously misplaced. Politics have corrupted their science, just as it has the IPCC's. How can we possibly trust the same people who have ignored ongoing outbreaks of tuberculosis, EVD68, and other diseases to suddenly start doing real science when a more serious outbreak occurs? Importing socialism, amnesty for illegals. While the White House sorority is importing terrorism through its refugee program and deadly diseases through its immigration policies, it is simultaneously importing socialism. The progressives have accomplished quite a bit in the century they've controlled public schools, but teaching progressivism takes time. It's taken generations to overcome the common sense inherent in the American people. Sometimes critical thinking still rears its troublesome head, as it did with those schoolchildren at Pine Bush High School who refused to sit still for the Pledge of Allegiance being read in Arabic. Fortunately for progressives, they have another source of low-information voters. Those they can't teach progressive socialism, they simply import. That's the real reason they are so adamant about amnesty for illegals. It's not about compassion or fairness or freedom. It's about power. Before talking about the present, let me enlighten you a little about the past. I'm going to let you in on a little progressive brainwashing that you didn't even know you were swallowing, hook, line, and sinker. How many times have you heard liberals argue that America lags behind Europe in quality of life because it doesn't have government-run healthcare or a larger welfare state in general? Have you heard that one? I hear people mindlessly repeating it all of the time. It's a mind trick, and a pretty good one at that. Why does this have to do with immigration? Think about it for a moment. What was America like when the huge waves of legal immigrants entered through Ellis Island during the late 19th and early 20th centuries? Did it have government health care? Did it have a large welfare state in general? No. In fact, That's precisely why those immigrants came to America, to escape governments with less freedom and large welfare states. That's why they called America the land of opportunity. It was our free markets, limited government, and culture of self-reliance, individual liberty and responsibility, and opportunity to become whatever you wanted if you worked hard enough. They came here because we had less government than they had at home, not more. I'll bet you never thought of that, did you? It never occurred to you that the kind of government these liberals want to construct, the socialist paradises in Sweden or France, are precisely the kind of governments millions of immigrants came here to get away from. These were the immigrants who helped make America the greatest nation in human history. German immigrants came here specifically to get away from the large welfare state in Bismarck's Germany. They waited in line at Ellis Island, learned to speak English, and studied to become citizens, not for a handout, but just for the opportunity to keep the fruits of their labor instead of having it stolen by the government. It goes without saying that immigrants who came to America during this period knew they'd have to be productive members of society in order to survive. They would have to assimilate into American culture and find their place in the American economy. They weren't going to get a handout. They were just going to get a fair chance. That was all people like my parents or any other immigrants were asking for back then. Even today, legal immigrants are far more likely to come to America for the same reasons. They come to attend American universities, earning degrees in medicine and engineering. They come to do highly technical jobs in fields where there is a shortage of their skills. They are more likely to start businesses and employ other people. Part of the reason for this is the immigration process has been discriminatory in the past. I know, that's a bad word to progressives. Liberals have convinced people that any discrimination is bad. That's ridiculous. Discrimination is necessary for survival. If you can't discriminate between edible plants and poisonous ones, you'll die. Every day you must discriminate in 1,000 ways to avoid death, financial problems, and other misfortunes. The immigration system is supposed to discriminate between different types of immigrants. That doesn't mean it discriminates based on their race, religion, or national origin. It shouldn't. It discriminates based on each individual's risk for American taxpayers versus his or her potential value to American society. Will this individual add to American society or become a burden upon it? No system is perfect, least of all when the government is running it, but it at least attempts to represent the interests of the American people in terms of who is approved to immigrate and who is not. It can at least screen people for diseases, find out what skills they have and what their plans are. That gives some indication of whether they will be a plus or a minus for American society. None of this happens when people immigrate illegally. As we've already seen, they are bringing diseases into the country that have been previously eradicated or have never been present here before. They tend to be low-skilled and much more likely to require government assistance than those who go through the proper channels. Many of them can't even read or write in their own language. After California passed a law allowing illegal immigrants to apply for driver's licenses, most were unable to pass the written test, even though it was offered in Spanish. Nevada had a similar experience after allowing illegals to apply for driver's licenses. 71% failed the test in their own language. Nevertheless, Nancy Pelosi actually told reporters that immigrants who flocked to our shores provided invigoration that made America the greatest country that has ever existed in the history of the world and will continue to. What is she saying? Does bringing in 2-year-old babies from El Salvador, whose mothers don't even read or write in Spanish, invigorate America? What jobs are they going to take? Are the 2-year-olds going to work? Of course, that's not why Pelosi wants them here. She wants them here to ensure the progressives have voters for their socialist welfare state. First, they get them in by any means possible. Then, they find a path to citizenship for people who literally invaded the United States without even needing an army. They are the army. It's a progressive socialist army that is going to change what's left of the United States after imported Islamists try to blow it up. This is the new immigration policy under the progressive Islamist takeover. If you're illiterate and from a socialist country, or Muslim and from a country rife with terrorism, you're admitted immediately and subsidized. If you're educated, Christian, Jewish, or self-sufficient, you can get in line. The progressives may eventually let you in, but they are going to let in 100 of the former group for every one of the latter. This isn't an accident. Common sense will tell you that the people who have valuable skills are more likely to cooperate with a process that is going to base its decision to let them in, at least partly, on those skills. Those who have little or no skills will tend to avoid it. The former group will further enrich American culture, the economy, and the nation. The latter are more likely to become a burden. But the illegals have one skill that liberals are extremely anxious to bring into this country. They are low-information voters who will vote Democrat if they get a path to citizenship. They come from largely socialist countries south of the U.S. border and are already indoctrinated into that worldview. All the Democrats have to do is get them in and make them citizens, and they can change this country forever. Forget what the president might say about being compassionate or fair-minded. Obama and his party want to maximize immigration because even legal immigrants tend to vote Democrat. According to the Center for Immigration Studies, the enormous flow of legal immigrants into the country, 29.5 million from 1980 to 2012, has remade and continues to remake the nation's electorate in favor of the Democratic Party. Nevertheless, most Republicans support reform of our immigration laws to make it easier for people to immigrate legally, even though it is politically disadvantageous for the party. That is precisely the opposite of the Democrats' strategy, which is to maximize the number of immigrants entering the United States, whether legally or not, regardless of the risks of violent crime or disease they pose. They want to get them in at any cost, including the cost of deadly epidemics, and streamline their path to citizenship, at which time most will become Democratic voters. That's the real reason Obama announced he would violate his oath and cease doing his constitutionally required duty to take care that the laws shall be faithfully executed. Not only is he not enforcing immigration laws, he's encouraging illegal immigration with welfare benefits and tax breaks. At a time when ISIS is rampaging across the Middle East, committing terrorist attacks in Europe, and threatening the same within the United States, he and his party have held the Department of Homeland Security budget hostage to further his amnesty for illegals agenda. It's the Cloward-Piven strategy in action, which calls for radicals to overwhelm public and private systems so there would be a reason for the government to step in. This isn't a secret. Several Republican congressmen saw through Obama's tactic immediately. According to WorldNet Daily, in the 1960s, Professors Andrew Cloward and Francis Fox Piven of Columbia University, Obama's alma mater, devised a plan to provoke chaos by deliberately overwhelming governmental systems and the U.S. economy to the point of collapse, paving the way for state intervention that would ultimately replace America's free enterprise republic with a collectivist system. I do feel this attempt to flood the border with illegals is a playing out of the Cloward-Piven theory, said Representative Steve King, Republican, Iowa. If you don't see them bring reinforcements down there to seal the border, that means that, yes, it's a Cloward-Piven maneuver to flood the country until we get to the point where we are an open borders country that welcomes everybody, legal and illegal, he told WND. In addition to overwhelming public and private systems, flooding the country with illegals who eventually get amnesty and vote also creates a whole new Democratic voting bloc. Representative Steve Stockman, Republican, Texas, agreed that Obama, who studied the chaos strategy at Columbia, according to a classmate, is trying to do a Cloward-Piven thing with the border. He said it's an open secret Obama is trying to flood Texas with illegals to make it into a blue state with a Democrat majority. If we lose Texas and it becomes like California, then the Republicans lose the chance of ever getting a Republican-elected president, the Texas lawmaker warned. Whether overwhelming public systems is intentional or not, it's happening. The mayor of Lynn, Massachusetts, says the influx of illegal immigrants over the past 2 years is stressing almost every service, from trash collection to health care. We have been aware of the unaccompanied children issue for quite a while, and we were able to absorb a lot of these children early on, said Lynn Mayor Judith Flanagan Kennedy. But it's gotten to the point where the school system is overwhelmed. Our health department is overwhelmed. The city's budget is being substantially altered in order to accommodate all of these admissions in the school department. Illegal immigration for profit. In addition to promoting the anti-American progressive Islamist agenda, illegal immigration also makes billions for special interests. I followed the money. You may remember the reporting last year about the luxury hotels being rehabbed for the illegal alien children, offering saunas, tennis courts, luxury pools, and more. The Obama administration actually bought a luxury hotel to convert into a facility for juvenile illegal aliens. If you're a poor American, do you have a beauty parlor at your disposal for free? Do you have flat-screen TV? Do you have free lawyers, doctors, dentists? Do you have a workout gym? Do you have a swimming pool? Do you have a soccer field in your housing complex? They do. They will. Somebody's making a fortune off of this. Where is the money coming from? Who are the contractors who are going to make billions off the illegal alien amnesty surge? I found the RFP put out in January 2015 for housing and clothing and feeding these children. The government was plotting to bring them in all along. But someone was making a fortune on it, I figured. But I didn't know who. A $50 million federal government contract to house illegal aliens at another facility that was blocked, and yet they're moving them in here? Many of the rooms are suites, private toilets and showers, flat screen and cable TV, soccer fields. You get the picture, right? Well, guess what? Some people are getting rich off the billion-dollar immigration surge, and they're not all Democrats. Only a handful of U.S. corporations have the honor of long-term contracts with federal agencies that deal with the immigration problem. It's a closed shop. And for these companies, the latest surge from Guatemala and El Salvador has meant big business and big profits. That's why Obama is pushing for emergency funding for so-called family detention centers like the one in Texas. They are more like resorts. Soccer fields with artificial turf, lighting, flat-screen TVs, and pools are amenities you might get on a vacation once a year, if you can afford to take a vacation at all. So why are you and I spending so much money on those who break our laws? The answer is profiteers. Every television, every desk lamp, every blade of fake soccer grass has a huge markup to it. You heard about the $32 aspirin in hospitals, right? That's nothing compared to what these companies are making on these detention facilities. It's connected to the companies that run prisons for profit. Do you get the picture? Do you know about prisons for profit? I dug into the particulars of one such company making a profit off the immigrant surge, the GEO Group. Who are they? In the past 6 years, GEO was awarded nearly $880 million in ICE contracts alone. Who is the parent company of GEO Corporation? Wackenhut Corporation, which owns a lot of private prisons and funded the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. ALEC is a lobbying group. They tell your elected officials what to vote on. They tell the elected officials where to eat, what to breathe, and how to operate. They run the country. Are you ready for this? What I'm about to tell you will change your view of politics for the rest of your life. Who's running this company who helps fund ALEC and is behind all of these resorts for illegal aliens? Well, I have the names because you wanted to know the answers. The top shareholders include people you never heard of. It's an international organization. They own facilities in the UK, Australia, South Africa, and the United States. The management team includes George Zoli, John Bulfin, Norman Carlson, and Thomas Wiersma. I don't know who they are, but maybe some of these hedge funds are familiar to you. They include BlackRock Fund Advisors, Credit Suisse, River Road Asset Management, LLC, Eagle Asset Management, Inc., Scopia Capital Management, LLC, Carlson Capital, LP, BlackRock Institutional Trust Company, Hotchkiss and Wiley Capital Management, and Vanguard Group, Inc. If you have money in any of them, it may be helping fund GEO Group's holding facilities for the illegal alien children. All of this is perfectly legal. Don't assume I'm saying there's anything illegal in what they're doing. I'm just telling you to follow the money. Maybe you have mutual funds, and you like the percentage you're making every year. Just know these companies are profiting from the illegal alien surge. You may say you're a conservative and against illegal immigration. Well, here are the mutual funds that hold GEO stock. Vanguard Specialized REIT Index Fund, Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Fund, iShares S&P Small Cap ETF, Prudential Jennison Equity Income Fund, Eagle Series Trust Small Cap Growth Fund, iShares Russell 2000 ETF, Vanguard Small Cap Index Fund, Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund. Do you get the picture? I'm just getting started. Who is on the GEO Group Board of Directors that is making billions off the illegal aliens living in luxury resorts? And this may explain why the Republicans, along with the Democrats, have been lobbying for amnesty in one form or another. Well, they're not household names, but they have names. In addition to CEO George Zoli, who is chairman of the board of directors includes Richard Glanton, chairman and CEO of Elected Face, Inc., and Norman Carlson, former director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Let me pause right there. The former director of the U.S. Federal Bureau of Prisons is on GEO's board. Think about that for a moment. It gets even better. Also on the board is Ann Newman Foreman, former Undersecretary of the U.S. Air Force. You were told women in the military would be much kinder and gentler? Well, there she is. She left the Air Force and she's on the board of directors of GEO Group. As I said, it's all perfectly legal. It's business as usual. Look how well they're all doing. They came to do good, and they did very well indeed. Clarence E. Anthony, president and CEO of Anthony Government Solutions, Inc., Christopher Wheeler, and Julie M. Wood are also all board members. Again, these are not household names, but wait until you hear the punchline, because you haven't heard it yet. The Koch brothers, David and Charles, who are two of the richest people in the world, are key funders of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. There you have it. You thought it was all liberals who wanted amnesty, but conservatives are also guiding forces behind the illegal immigration surge because they own facilities with thousands of unused beds. And they want you to fill them and pay for them. It is big business, big government, and big religion, all in one bundle, and getting paid off your back. Can we get America back? As our dear Marxist leader would say, let me be perfectly clear. I'm not against immigration. I'm the child of immigrant parents myself. Everyone living in this country is descended from immigrants, including the inappropriately named Native Americans. They aren't indigenous to America either. They came here from Asia. They just came before the Europeans. That's something else you probably didn't learn in school. Immigrants helped build this country into the greatest nation on earth. I believe that every human being has a natural right to leave the country he or she is born in and seek a better life in another. But that right has the same natural limit that all rights have. The limits drawn around us by the equal rights of others, as Jefferson so eloquently put it. Among other things, that means you do not have a right to immigrate to another country carrying a potentially deadly disease that could harm the people living there. You don't have a right to enter that country illegally and subvert its constitution. Most obviously, you don't have a right to immigrate into a country for the express purpose of killing its citizens or overthrowing its government. This is precisely the kind of immigration our government is actively facilitating. It's all about the type of people you attract with strictly enforced immigration policies based upon adding to American society versus those you attract with no immigration policies whatsoever. The latter is the most charitable description for what the White House sorority is doing. The flood of illegals over our southern borders has been going on a long time. The Republican administration before Obama certainly didn't do anything to stop it. George W. Bush's brother Jeb wouldn't be any different. He thinks we need more immigrants. Importing low-information voters from socialist countries is killing us slowly through the erosion of our legal traditions, language, and culture of free enterprise and personal responsibility. Importing terrorists could kill some of us tomorrow, as we've already seen with terrorist attacks by Islamofascists like the Sarnoff brothers or the female would-be terrorists who plotted to attack New York City. It all goes back to government zero. When you have a government acting in its own interests rather than those of the people, you have immigration policies like this. The progressive Islamist takeover benefits a government that wants to expand its power rather than secure the blessings of liberty. You've heard about the Roman policy to divide and rule. That's just what the government is doing. While it divides indigenous Americans over race, sex, and economic class with its economic and social engineering policies, it creates whole new groups of Americans who don't speak our language and don't share our values with its immigration policy. Some of them even want to kill us. Then it champions their rights not to be discriminated against while trampling our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. While we're fighting each other and these government-sanctioned invaders, the government grows stronger and we get weaker. I've been warning about the dangers posed by injudicious immigration policies for decades. Now those dangers are accelerating exponentially with the progressive Islamist takeover. If we ever want to see our country again, we need to stop it now. In another decade, it might be too late. Chapter 8. Zero Religion. Lenin's Pope. Hitler's Pope. As part of their ongoing war on religion, leftists regularly attack the Pope. One of their favorite smears is to call him a Nazi, a tactic they used most recently against Pope Benedict XVI. Pope Benedict had been in the Hitler Youth, but only because it was legally mandated for all 14-year-old boys in Germany at the time. It was the same as being drafted into the army. Had he not joined, they would have come to his house and made him join. Those are facts. But facts are immaterial to the left. They have an agenda, and Pope Benedict being a Nazi fit that agenda at the time, regardless of all evidence to the contrary. It wasn't the first time they ran the Pope is a Nazi campaign. You may remember the 1999 book Hitler's Pope by John Cornwell. In it, Cornwell elaborates on a charge made previously against Pope Pius XII in Ralph Hohut's 1963 play The Deputy. Both claim Pope Pius XII helped the Nazis because, as Cardinal Secretary of the State of the Church, he signed the Reichskonkordat. The Reichskonkordat was an agreement with the German government stipulating that clergy would refrain from certain political activity in exchange for guarantees of the Catholic Church's rights. This, they argue, helped legitimize the Nazi regime and stifle criticism against it. Never mind that the agreement was not signed by Hitler and doesn't even mention the Nazi Party. Forget that Pope Pius actually saved many Jews from the Holocaust, was called the mouthpiece of Jewish war criminals by the Nazis themselves, and was mourned as a hero by Jews all over the world upon his death in 1958. Even Cornwell himself has largely backed away from the allegations against Pope Pius in his own book. Again, leftists aren't interested in facts. They are interested in their agenda, and the Pope is a Nazi fits their agenda. The Pope and his influence over billions of Catholics stands in the way of their plans for a godless socialist world order. So, in addition to attacking religion in every public space, they attack the Pope when doing so meets their needs. Politicizing the papacy. That has certainly not been the case with Pope Francis. Pope Francis is different, because he is not a spiritual leader. He is a political operative, with all the earmarks of having been hand-picked for his office, the way French President François Hollande and our own dear leader Obama were picked for theirs. It wouldn't be the first time the Vatican has been occupied by a political rather than a spiritual leader. The papacy is 2,000 years old. It has had good periods and bad periods, as has any long-standing institution run by imperfect human beings. There were popes who were honest, wise, and deeply spiritual, and others who were morons, scoundrels, or worse. There were times when the papacy was the spiritual center of the Catholic faith, and times when it was little more than a political office, complete with rule over large areas of land and armies commanded by the Pope to enforce that rule. Pope John XII was definitely an example of the latter. He was simultaneously the secular prince of Rome and the Pope, but he acted more like the pagan Roman emperor Caligula. He was accused of turning the sacred palace into a whorehouse, fornicating with several women there, including his own niece, and then blinding his confessor. He put deviant liberals in Hollywood to shame. Pope John was eventually deposed as both ruler of Rome and Pope, but subsequently regained both offices, brutally mutilating prisoners captured in his victory. He is said to have died in the act of committing adultery. Pope Benedict IX was also accused of rape, murder, and other atrocities, while Pope Boniface VIII demolished several towns while feuding with a powerful family. The ironically named Pope Innocent IV tortured heretics, including Galileo, for the heresy of claiming the earth revolved around the sun. Were the Church not nourished by the Holy Spirit, it might never have survived some of its darker times. But it did survive. And in modern times, the church and the papacy have concerned themselves much more with saving souls than politics. That's not to say the Pope should have no political opinions at all. Pope Pius XI, who was actually the sitting pope when the Reichskonkordat was signed, said, "When politics come near the altar, then religion, the church, the pontiff, have not only the right, but the duty to give directions and indications to be followed by Catholics." When politics come near the altar means when governments infringe upon or attempt to influence the church on spiritual matters. That's precisely the opposite of the Pope using his position as spiritual leader to influence politics, but that's what Pope Francis has been doing. Not only has he abused the trust placed in him for political purposes, he's sold out to the socialists, who'd love to abolish all religion if they could get away with it. Pius XII was wrongly called Hitler's Pope. The charge didn't fit the facts, as the author who wrote the book eventually admitted himself, but Pope Francis can very appropriately be called Lenin's Pope. Let's consider the facts supporting that charge. Channeling Lenin. Just 8 months after taking office, Pope Francis published Evangelii Gaudium, an apostolic exhortation in which he makes the same spurious criticisms of capitalism Lenin used to lead the Bolshevik Revolution. As just one example, he says, "We can no longer trust in the unseen forces and the invisible hand of the market. Growth in justice requires more than economic growth. While presupposing such growth, it requires decisions, programs, mechanisms, and processes specifically geared to a better distribution of income, the creation of sources of employment, and an integral promotion of the poor, which goes beyond a simple welfare mentality." The left always talks about the free market as if it were being run by someone, and income was being distributed. That's counterintuitive. By definition, a free market does not run according to a plan, and no one decides how income is distributed. Each individual decides whether to buy or sell, at what price, and at what quantity. They aren't told what to do by anyone. That's why they call it free. The Pope doesn't believe freedom works. He wants decisions, programs, mechanisms, and processes to be imposed on people. He wants income redistributed, meaning forcibly taken from some people and arbitrarily handed out to others. This is just what Lenin did after the 1917 revolution in Russia. He implemented decisions, programs, mechanisms, and processes based on Karl Marx's maxim, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. Guess how that worked out? Things got so bad in Russia that Lenin was in danger of being deposed by 1921. The Soviet Union survived only because Lenin's new economic policy restored some semblance of a market economy. The Soviets, the Vietnamese, and the Chinese all learned the hard way that communism doesn't work. They all abandoned it on their own after suffering miserably, trying to make it work. We often refer to China as communist China because the Communist Party still asserts autocratic rule over the political process. But China might be less communist economically today than the United States. In some ways, China is the most capitalist society on earth. The United States doesn't have a completely capitalist system. The free market has been continually altered since the progressive assault on it began over 100 years ago. We have a mixed economy, like Europe, although the United States has more capitalism than socialism in the mix, at least for now. But politicians still interfere with the peaceful exchanges of property that would occur without interference in a free market. Too often, voters choose politicians based on how much of other people's money they are going to get, or what industries are going to get subsidies or favors. China's system is very similar. They just don't bother with the fraud of elections. Americans went to the polls in 2014. They voted against the leftist policies of the imposter in the White House. They said "niet" to the Communist Democrat Party of America. What was the result? The next day, the arrogant, lame duck president laughed at us and said our votes don't count, because only a small number of people voted, meaning white people and working people. He said, "Wait until 2016 when I flood America with 20 million illegal aliens and fill the streets with Occupy Movement radicals. I'll get them all registered and they'll all vote. Then you'll see who really runs this country." I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he really meant. China practices the same sort of state-directed capitalism as the United States, without the political need to appeal to voters. There are no elections. Instead, everything is done through bribery. If you want to start a business in China, make sure you bribe the right government officials. In America, you may not have to bribe politicians directly in order to start a business, but you do have to pay for permits. If you want to build a house, there are permits for that too. If you want your kids to go to an elite college, you might have to make a donation to fund a new building or an academic department. It's bribery in all but name. The Chinese are more honest about it. They just hand over $5,000 gift cards directly and dispense with the whitewashing. Say what you want about them. Their economy is booming, while ours continues to contract, regardless of phony government statistics indicating it's recovered. In any case, China is not a communist state. They learned the hard way how lethal communism is. They paid an even bigger price in human life than Russia, where full communism was abandoned earlier. But every country that has tried communism has had the same results. Even Vladimir Putin admits it was a mistake. He reminded President Obama about the horrors of communism at Davos back in 2009 in an attempt to dissuade Obama from pursuing his $800 billion disaster of a mortgage bailout. In the 20th century, the Soviet Union made the state's role absolute. In the long run, this made the Soviet economy totally uncompetitive. This lesson cost us dearly. I am sure nobody wants to see it repeated. Apparently, Pope Francis does want to see it repeated. Not only is he advocating thoroughly discredited socialist theories, he's completely misinformed on the economic conditions he says he wants to improve. He mentions inequality 11 times in his apostolic exhortation, calling it the root of all social ills and saying it is increasingly evident. He says the need to resolve the structural causes of poverty cannot be delayed. He reiterated this in a letter to the president of Panama earlier this year. Inequality, the unfair distribution of riches and resources, is source for conflicts and violence among peoples because it involves the progress of some to be built on the necessary sacrifice of others, and to live with dignity, they have to fight against the rest. There is only one problem. By every objective measure, inequality is not increasing. It's decreasing at rates orders of magnitude greater than at any time in human history. According to The Economist, the poverty rate worldwide has been cut in half in the past 20 years. Not only has poverty decreased spectacularly, but it has done so precisely because so many countries have shifted away from the kind of socialist policies Pope Francis advocates and toward the free market system he condemns. I'm not saying the Pope is evil. He probably believes the things he says, just as millions of leftist voters do. Why wouldn't he? Pope Francis was born and raised in socialist South America. He was immersed in anti-capitalist thinking his entire life. He probably believes in socialism as much as American businessmen believe in free enterprise. As The Economist said of an interview the Pope gave in 2014, by positing a link between capitalism and war, he seems to be taking an ultra-radical line, one that consciously or unconsciously follows Vladimir Lenin in his diagnosis of capitalism and imperialism as the main reason why World War broke out a century ago. As you can see, I am not alone in recognizing the influence of Lenin on the Holy See. Whether it is conscious or unconscious, it's still socialism, and terribly destructive. For a man whom billions trust to hold these views is terribly dangerous for a world in need of more freedom, not less. This is why borders and culture are important. It is no accident that the first non-European pope in 1,200 years would have these radical views. We believe the thing we are raised to believe. If you elect a pope from a socialist country, as Argentina was for most of Pope Francis's life there, you should expect him to have socialist views on the economy. When you allow millions of people from a socialist country to cross your border and eventually become citizens who vote, you should expect socialist representatives and eventually socialist laws. This is all the more dangerous because the people destroying your freedom believe they're right. It's very hard to accept that the things you have been taught since you were a child are wrong. People living in socialist countries have been taught all their lives that free enterprise is something to be feared rather than embraced. They have been taught that business owners exploit workers, rather than give them an opportunity to be far more productive than they could be on their own. The power of religious authority. People subscribing to bad ideas is not something to be feared in and of itself. That's one of the rights the First Amendment is designed to protect, to believe and say very stupid things, as long as we do not do harm to others. But when you combine stupid ideas with power, it can be very dangerous. Power wielded based on stupid ideas can do harm to others. It can destroy society, the economy, even an entire nation. Just ask Vladimir Putin when he's in the mood to be honest, as he was at Davos in 2009. Power can come in many forms. Certainly, our crypto-Marxist president is an example of stupid ideas combined with great power. He wields that power directly as commander-in-chief of our military and executor of our laws. Large voting blocs also wield great power, although they wield it indirectly by deciding who holds office. When you deliberately invite tens of millions of people with very bad ideas into your nation and give them a path to citizenship, you are investing them with the power to elect the people who will eventually harm you. The Pope wields a third kind of power, the power to influence ideas. Millions of honest Catholics look to the Pope for guidance on how to live a good Christian life. When he's guiding people on how to emulate Jesus in their personal lives, he is a tremendous force for good in the world. But when he's acting as a political operative, he's just the opposite. Besides, with all due respect, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's a little like medicine. The United States has the greatest doctors in the world when it comes to diagnosing and treating acute illnesses. That's what they're trained to do. And no system trained them better than America's former free market healthcare industry. If you get a serious illness and the most effective treatment is medicine or surgery, there is nowhere on earth you're in better hands than with an American medical doctor, at least for now. However, medical doctors are not experts in nutrition, in wellness, or in preventing you from getting sick and needing their help. This is something I know a little about. I earned a PhD from the University of California, Berkeley in nutritional ethnomedicine. Medical doctors can tell you exactly what is going on with your body and can suggest medical solutions. But as far as living a healthier life when you're not sick, they are little more than very intelligent laypeople. When they are giving you the same nutritional or fitness advice as Michelle Obama, you may want to do some research on your own. The same goes for the Pope. He doesn't hold a degree in economics. He's never even run a business. On economics, he's less qualified than most Catholics who at least work in the private sector and understand the realities of the business world. The Pope has a few years' experience as a chemical engineer, a janitor, and a bouncer in a bar. These are all honest professions, but they hardly qualify him to opine on complex economic subjects. Unfortunately, millions of Catholics believe they have to agree with him on economics, even though he knows less about it than they do. The church dogma of papal infallibility helps bolster this misconception. Many well-meaning Catholics believe they have to agree with the Pope on everything because they're taught he's infallible. Catholics, I have news for you. You don't have to agree with the Pope on economics to be a good Catholic. The church doesn't teach that, and in all fairness, even Pope Francis has said this: I am only infallible if I speak ex cathedra, but I shall never do that, so I am not infallible. The church defines papal infallibility very narrowly. They only consider him infallible when, in the exercise of his office as shepherd and teacher of all Christians, in virtue of his supreme apostolic authority, he defines a doctrine concerning faith or morals to be held by the whole church. On other subjects, his opinion is just that, an opinion. When he tells Catholics to care about the poor and work toward a world with less poverty and suffering, he's advancing the message of Jesus. When he opines on the best economic system to make that happen, he's out of his depth. He was similarly out of his depth when he supported Dear Leader Obama's overtures toward Cuba. First, he hosted meetings between Raul Castro and President Obama at the Vatican. Then his Secretary of State issued a letter applauding the historic decision taken by the governments of the United States of America and Cuba to establish diplomatic relations with the aim of overcoming, in the interest of the citizens of both countries, the difficulties which have marked their recent history. Now, there have been arguments made by conservative, free market proponents to establish diplomatic relations and trade with Cuba as a way of showing Cuba's people the benefits of capitalism, and eventually inspiring them to overthrow Castro and the Marxists. But that was not what Lenin's Pope had in mind. He doesn't see the Castro regime as evil and in need of being overthrown. He considers it at least equal to the American government. He probably believed the regime would treat its people better after he stuck his nose into international relations. Exactly the opposite happened. Immediately after Obama announced sweeping changes to U.S. policy on Cuba, the communist regime banned a free speech protest in Havana. Not only did the government arrest three dissidents before the event even started, it cut off calls to the organizer's cell phone. Instead of the prison island becoming more liberated or more liberal, it has become more draconian. Anyone who understands the inherent connection between socialism and authoritarianism would have seen this coming a mile away. But leftists don't see the connection. They believe socialism provides more freedom, regardless of an entire century's evidence to the contrary. Democratic politicians regularly praise communist leaders as wise and caring, even as those same leaders murder millions, stifle all dissent to their rule, and otherwise oppress their people. Speaking in support of Obama's Affordable Care Act at a town hall meeting in 2009, Representative Diane Watson said, "And I want you to know now, you can think whatever you want to about Fidel Castro, but he was one of the brightest leaders I have ever met." That same year, Obama's communications director, Anita Dunn, had this to say at a high school graduation. "The third lesson and tip actually comes from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa. Not often coupled with each other, but the two people I turn to most to basically deliver a simple point, which is, you're going to make choices. You're going to challenge. You're going to say, why not? You're going to figure out how to do things that have never been done before." Yes, she praised the same Mao Zedong who intentionally killed tens of millions of his own citizens in political purges, and unintentionally killed at least 15 million more trying to implement his disastrous Marxist economic policies. Liberal politicians and media do this all the time. They correctly criticize Hitler for killing 6 million people, but turn a blind eye toward the killing of tens of millions by socialist dictators. This is certainly the way Obama looks at communists like Fidel and Raul Castro, and is likely the way Pope Francis sees them too. He may not condone the oppression of the Castro regime, as long as the regime remains committed to the social justice of communism. As I've always said, liberalism is a mental disorder. A liberal can completely ignore crimes against humanity by a socialist dictator, just because he is a socialist. And liberals will rationalize away horrific crimes committed by someone if that person shares a race or religion with others who are victims of prejudice. If a white man commits a violent crime, they want him prosecuted. If a black man commits the same crime, they want to blame white people for what the criminal did. That's actually true racism. It is judging people not by their actions or character, but by their race or religion. I believe everyone should be subject to the same rules, regardless of race or religion. Everyone should enjoy the same rights and privileges and should be held equally accountable for his actions, regardless of race, religion, or sex. The Pope attacks free speech. That's why I wish Lenin's Pope would spend more time condemning the jihadists torturing and beheading Christians instead of attacking free markets and free speech. He couldn't even bring himself to condemn the horrific murders of the Charlie Hebdo employees without making excuses for the murderers. "There is a limit," he said, speaking in Italian. "Every religion has its dignity. I cannot mock a religion that respects human life and the human person. If a close friend says a swear word against my mother, he's going to get a punch in the nose. One cannot provoke. One cannot insult other people's faith. One cannot make fun of faith." You heard that correctly. The Pope actually made excuses for the Islamofascist murderers, just as progressive socialists like him do at every opportunity. It would have floored me if I didn't see through this fuckier from the beginning. He's the perfect complement to our progressive Islamist president. Pope Francis says free speech should be limited, and one can expect to be answered with violence for saying something insulting. That's completely ridiculous. The definition of free speech is the right to say controversial, even insulting things without fearing violence, either by the government or individuals. People don't have to like what you say or agree with you. They can say insulting things back. The appropriate response is to answer them with reason or ignore them, not break into their offices and gun them down. Thomas Jefferson actually refuted the Pope directly. The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. Jefferson is saying something we all learned in kindergarten. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me. He's talking about government power, rather than violence committed by individuals. But the principle is the same. The reason governments aren't allowed to infringe upon free speech is because enforcing the law is a violent act. When the police show up to enforce the law, they don't hand you an invitation. They take you away and use violence if you resist. The principle behind the First Amendment is that speech itself, regardless of how offensive, cannot justifiably be answered with violence. I didn't like much of the liberal nonsense Charlie Hebdo put out, but I'm free to disagree with them or not listen at all. That's how freedom works. Again, this is cultural. I'm not surprised at all by Pope Francis's view on how speech should be limited. He's the product of a socialist culture where stifling free speech goes hand in hand with stifling economic freedom. You can't have free speech in a socialist society. Too many people would start asking each other why they're working so hard and still getting poorer and poorer. I know. Your whole life you were told, oh, watch out for those right-wingers. Those right-wingers will take away your freedom of speech. Those right-wingers will tell you what art you can produce. Yes, all those fears were valid, but you were afraid of the wrong people. When you have a damaged optic chiasma, you see everything upside down and backward. It's not the people who want the government to leave you alone that are the problem. It's the ones who want it to help you that you should be afraid of. I know this firsthand. I'm the only member of the American media who is not permitted to enter Britain based on statements I never even made. As I said, facts don't matter. It wasn't right-wingers who banned me, but Britain's wonderful, caring, liberal Labour Party government who did it. These are the great defenders of free speech. In fairness, Cameron and his phony conservatives haven't overturned the ban. They were about as conservative as Hollow Man Boehner. Don't forget that the First Amendment doesn't just protect free speech. It's also about the separation of church and state. When did the Catholic Church become so brazen as to suddenly step over that important firewall? I'll tell you. When the Catholic Church was given billions of dollars by the federal government to help usher in millions and millions of illegal aliens because they need the pews filled with illiterates from Central America, that's when it happened. Once the Catholic Church and Baptist Family Services and certain Jewish and Protestant organizations were corrupted by Obama with billions of dollars in taxpayer-funded resettlement programs, the churches, the synagogues, and others became useless as institutions of religion and instead became arms of the community organizer Barack Obama. So it's about much more than free speech. It's about destroying all semblance of civilized society. Stalin, Mao, and Pol Pot weren't the only communists who committed atrocities. All of them did. Look up the 1944 Battle of Miligalas in Greece. Calling it a battle is disingenuous. It wasn't a battle. It was a massacre. What is the Pope defending? Communist guerrillas rounded up 50 nationalist soldiers and more than 1,000 villagers and butchered them to the last man, woman, and child. That is what the communists did in Greece. That is what communists always do. They have that in common with the maniacs calling themselves the Islamic State. Contrary to what the communists in America, who like to call themselves progressives, might tell you, socialism is a brutal, violent ideology. Free enterprise is stifled by force. Property is redistributed by force. You cannot complain because speech is repressed by force. The so-called progressives are the most vicious subpopulation in this country. That's why they don't speak out against the massacres occurring daily against Christians and other minorities, including homosexuals, by their friends, the Islamists. They are used to all of their heroes doing the exact same thing. Ironically, most of them would be the first ones lined up against a wall for a firing squad, or sent to the gulag in a traditional socialist country, or tortured and beheaded in an Islamic one. If they had any sense, they'd side with the forces of civilization against both. Lenin's Pope was raised in a socialist oppressive society like this, and those influences are showing. The Pope promotes junk science. If you think he was wrong about economics and foreign relations, wait until you hear what he has planned next. He has already said, climate change, the loss of biodiversity, deforestation are already showing their devastating effects in the great cataclysms we witness. Now he's writing an encyclical letter on the subject and plans to support Obama on climate change initiatives in the United Nations. Remember when I said the Church limits papal infallibility to a very narrow range of subjects? Well, encyclicals have traditionally been used by popes on only the most important religious issues. That naturally limits them to subjects the author knows something about. The Pope knows less about climate science than he does about economics. I actually worked to save rainforests as an environmental activist before that moniker became synonymous with socialist. Pope Francis has never done environmental work. His only scientific experience is as a chemical technician, which has nothing to do with the climate or the environment. The only thing the Pope knows about climate is when it rains, his aides open up an umbrella for him. In an attempt to represent him as a scientist, the progressive left has propagated the myth that Pope Francis has a master's degree in chemistry. He doesn't. According to the National Catholic Reporter, he doesn't have a college degree in any subject, neither a master's nor a bachelor's degree. That doesn't stop him from rendering his utterly valueless opinion. In the absence of any actual scientific understanding of climate or the environment, he just repeats liberal talking points, putting a religious spin on them. I don't know if it, human activity, is the only cause, but mostly, in great part, it is man who has slapped nature in the face, he said. We have, in a sense, taken over nature. I think we have exploited nature too much, Francis said, citing deforestation and monoculture. Thanks be to God that today there are voices, so many people who are speaking out about it. Yes, shame on those who have slapped nature in the face, but nothing but excuses for jihadist lunatics who cut people's heads off merely because of their religion. No wonder the most anti-Christian president in American history is wrapping himself in the robes of the Holy Father. They think alike on so many things. So here is the Pope again, using his office to promote a political movement. I say political rather than scientific, because that's what the entire environmental movement has become. It's not about saving the planet anymore, if it ever was. It's about money and control. Like every other crisis the left dreams up, the proposed solution to climate change is politicians getting more of your money and controlling more of your life. What never ceases to amaze me is that anyone believes the climate change narrative. When you take a step back and think about what we are asked to believe, it really is quite ridiculous. It requires us to forget the basic science we all learned in grade school. Most of us learned about the recurring ice ages that have occurred throughout the Earth's history, somewhere around the fifth grade. They were all ended by global warming, which was obviously occurring long before the Industrial Revolution. In fact, the first ice age occurred over 2 billion years ago, during the Proterozoic Eon. As you may have surmised, the warming period that ended it wasn't caused by human activity. It wasn't dinosaurs engaging in heavy industry either. They wouldn't exist for over 1 billion years themselves. The truth is that the Earth has cooled and warmed in cycles during its entire existence. Technically, we are still in the last of 5 major ice ages in Earth's history. What most people refer to as the end of the last ice age around 10,000 years ago was really just the end of the last glacial period. The current ice age, as defined by real scientists, won't end until there is no glacial ice anywhere, including in Antarctica. Even within the current interglacial period, there have been significant fluctuations in temperature. Right after your fifth grade science class, you may have learned in history class about the Norse settling Greenland. They were able to do so around 1000 AD because of the medieval warm period, which made Greenland much more hospitable. At the time of their arrival, Greenland's climate was relatively mild. That is, as mild as it is today, according to Jared Diamond. Its rivers were more navigable. Trees and herbaceous plants were more abundant, and crops could be grown farther north. The Norse settlements ended abruptly during the 1400s, with the onset of what is now known as the Little Ice Age, a period of dramatic cooling. The details of their demise are uncertain, but all theories include the effects of cooler temperatures on farming and navigation. There was less land to farm, and less wild vegetation, and the North Atlantic Ocean was harder to navigate due to more abundant ice. All of these pressures combined with the new competition from the Thule ancestors of the Inuit and mistakes the Norse made themselves in managing resources. What is important to take away from their story is that much more violent climate changes than anything experienced since the Industrial Revolution have always occurred on this planet. The medieval warm period and Little Ice Age are not controversial theories. They are accepted scientific facts, although the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, has tried to mitigate their inconvenient truths by characterizing them as regional climate patterns. Perhaps the biggest whopper the climate change cult wants us to swallow is that carbon dioxide causes global warming. They've actually called carbon dioxide a pollutant. Yes, I'm talking about the same carbon dioxide that is necessary for photosynthesis and without which all plant life would die. This is something you probably learned in fourth grade, but the enviro-socialists want you to forget that too. The data they rely on does show a correlation between warming periods and carbon dioxide, but the increases in carbon dioxide always occur after the temperature increases. So increases in carbon dioxide don't cause global warming. Global warming causes increases in carbon dioxide. Obviously, a point-by-point scientific rebuttal to the climate change theory would require its own book. I do deal with it at greater length in the next chapter. I've come to my own conclusion as a scientist, knowing the historical background behind this movement. Common sense will serve you just as well. I invite you to do your own research. You'll find every major assertion of the climate change hoax completely refuted by qualified scientists. As with everything else, the leftist media ignores the evidence and goes on repeating the lies. Even the scientists the IPCC relies on don't tell anywhere near the same story about climate change the politicians do. They still debate quite a bit about what causes it, how dramatic it has been or will be, or even if it is ultimately harmful or helpful to human life. That's right. The IPCC's own scientists aren't even sure global warming won't be a good thing. Before getting back to the Pope's role in